Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Support WrestleTalk!
Donate on Patreon.
Making their way to the ring at a combined weight of undeniably sexy, hailing from London, the Wrestle Ramble Podcast!
Hello and welcome to the Wrestle Ramble Podcast. I am Ollie Davis and I'm joined by Luke Owen. I didn't do the inflection thing, mostly because I forgot.
Well, that's fine, because I don't think many people like it anyway.
What are you talking about?
I have had some feedback
the
from people saying
that. The Podswafters love it.
I don't think they do.
They love it.
Hello, Swaff Nation, and a hello to you, Oliver Davis. How the devil are you?
I'm doing okay. I finished watching that Flat Earthers documentary I spoke about yesterday,
Oh, yeah?
Behind the Curve.
Mm-hmm.
It's good. It had unexpected feels. I started watching it thinking I'm gonna laugh at flat earthers for 90 minutes, but actually a large majority of the people were very, very smart and sort of like naturally inquisitive, and they're like, well, I'm gonna prove this. The only difference between me and them is that they use those powers to prove the earth is flat.
Mm-hmm.
Something they have tremendous difficulty in doing.
Yes.
There's this bit in the film where they say, well, all we need to do is get one of these super special laser gyroscopes from a plane, but they're $20,000. And then we can show that the Earth, like, because if it's a ball that's moving,
yeah,
then you have one of these, and every hour or so, based on the way the Earth rotates, in theory, it should tilt by about 15 degrees.
Mm-hmm.
And someone bought one, and they did it, and it tilted 15 degrees. and they were like, okay, that's not the result we wanted. But, you know, the scientific method is all about trying again, trying to break your hypothesis. So they did it again in a new way, where it was in this isolated ice chamber thing, another really expensive expenditure, and it tilted 15 degrees again. And I'm like, huh, I know. It's because it's tracking the sky. The sky's tracking 15 degrees.
Oh, I see.
So they did this, they put it in another thing that would stop it tracking the sky, and it's still tilted 15 degrees. And they're like, we're going to have to find another experiment. But it's like, they're really smart. Like, to think of all those ways to break that theory. I was like, that's really good. And a lot of the scientific experts they brought on to talk about it, like, they told them about these experiments. And a bunch of them were like, that's a really interesting experiment. And then they did this, there was this scientific community, like, speech thing that had a lot of people making fun of flat earthers. But then one guy came out at the end and said, hey, look, like, it's funny for us to look down on flat earthers, but these are actually really smart people who have just fallen through. These could have been scientists if their lives went another way and didn't become so fixated on this one theory. And it's really our job as scientists to be in a dialogue with them and not look down on them and not, like, patronize them and make them, you know, like, work towards something together. Because it's like flat earth, I don't think I think they believe in flat earth because of some distrust of authority.
It's the Illuminati arguments, yeah, and things like that. Like, when me and Laurie made fun of the Illuminati, or people who tell you that there is an Illuminati, on an episode of NXT, and a guy commented saying, like, you're an absolute idiot if you don't think there is something, there is like a higher power at work. And I'm like, well, no, it's just that the higher power is corporations controlling everything. Like, that's not the Illuminati. That's just corporations who control parliament. That's and the presidency. That's just how life works. There's no secret bunker with lizard people in it.
Yeah. But it's like, but then you're like, well, why do people believe in in the Illuminati? Not just like the Illuminati. Like, I still think the Illuminati is a symptom of something, mm-hmm. rather than, oh, it's because it's the Illuminati who flat earth and everything. I think there's an element of simplification because it's easier.
Well, that's what I mean. I wasn't saying the two were connected. I'm just saying that there is, I think a lot of people just want to find like just one thing that they can say that is what it is. I don't trust NASA, ergo the earth must be flat.
Yeah. And I never really thought of it before, but it's also, they don't trust NASA, they don't trust the government, they don't trust anything big like that, because society's kind of left them behind, and like they feel outside of society. And I think that's something everyone can relate to at one times or another, but like for them it's very extreme and almost pathological.
Yeah.
So yeah, it was a really interesting documentary, and I think I finally get AJ Styles.
Slightly on that subject, I suppose. Sorry, I nearly coughed into the microphone there. Yesterday's episode, not a positive episode.
No.
And I could tell that it was not a positive episode because I got feedback. And we never get feedback on episodes unless it was an episode that that people loved, of an episode of Raw or SmackDown that they loved and we didn't like. That's the only time we ever get feedback on this show, or the actual content of this show. And I got two different emails, and I've had several tweets as well saying, like, you were too negative, you were this, that, and the other. Someone suggested that we change up the lineup so that, like, you're not burned out on Raw all the time and I'm not burned out on SmackDown. That's why we hate the shows all the time. Going by the Elimination Chamber review and the other reviews we've done this year, I don't think that's the case.
Yeah.
I just think we didn't like one episode.
Well, let's dive into some debate in the spirit of Flat Earth.
Absolutely. Well, I wanted to connect that to this because it's sort of tangentially connected. Hey, man, it was very sad listening to this week's Wrestle Ramble. Just too much negativity. I had to skip over most of it up until the outro. I think this comes from you and Ollie agree on most wrestling opinions. Maybe you need someone else to add a diversity to the conversation, as a lot of your fans find the show too negative at times. And dude, your part about the Prime Minister going against global warming, well, a lot of people just don't believe in it and think scientists solutions will not work in reality, and tech and the free market would sort this problem out. Have a good day. Much love and peace.
Well, I mean, that's it's difficult because I think people also like consistency of the lineup. Because you could listen to many different reviews of Raw, but I think most people listen to this show to get mine and yours reviews together,
yeah,
as a sort of coherent thing. And we disagree a lot of times, but we also do agree on a lot of stuff. You weren't as negative as on it as I was, but I don't think anyone in our office would have been the other way.
Not 100% the other way. Absolutely not.
Like, none of us loved it. In fact, all of us were quite down on it. I'm not saying your opinion's wrong.
Nope.
I actually agree that it was surprising. It's a surprise I didn't like, but I can see why people liked the call-ups for a shock factor and a freshen up, because my god didn't Raw need it. But I don't think you should let someone else's opinion on one thing make you go, oh, well, I don't like them as a person anymore.
No, and I get it as well, because like way back when, and I'm talking like very, very way back when I used to do the old version of the movie podcast that you and I eventually just hosted on our own. Way back when it was in the Skype call days, when I would Skype some of the other writers and we would just talk about movies. But there was one reviewer that we had on there that hated every big budget movie. Like, if it was a blockbuster movie, unless it starred Tom Cruise, he just hated it. And it really sucked to be on those calls where you're like, I loved Iron Man 3. I loved this about it. I loved this about it, this about it. And he would go, this sucked, and this sucked. And it especially wound me up when he would say something and I'd go, I do agree with you on that. That was a big problem with the movie, but I did love the film anyway. So it just annoys me even more that I think you're right. And I'm not saying that's the case here, but it does bum you out to listen to something. If you really love something and then you listen to a load of people going like, well, that was crap, then you're like, kind of, yeah, it does kind of bum you out a little bit. But also, I think at the same time, it's good to hear a variety of opinions. I was having a conversation with a debate on someone on Twitter yesterday who was defending Paige's comments about the way she said about WWE, because his argument was, well, she amended the statement and people just didn't read between the lines. I was like, well, there's no lines to be read between. She literally said it was never WWE holding women back. It was the fans who were at fault. Like, there's no out of context to take that quote. All the context is there. She was towing the company line, and it was a very silly thing to say. And then on Twitter, she was like, people missed my point. What I was saying was there's fault on both sides. That's not what you said. And we kind of had this debate, but he was just adamant, like, no, that's not what she said. That's not what she said. You're not listening to what she said. And I'm like, well, I was listening to what she said. And you just have these agreed. And in the end, we're like, we'll just agree to disagree. You're not going to change my mind. I'm not going to change your mind. And it was actually winding me up a little bit during the day, because I'm like, oh man, you're not listening.
Mm.
I think it's good to have a diverse of opinions. And that's kind of what we were saying at the end of this. It's like, he listens to the show or he watches the Wrestle Ramble, doesn't always agree with us, but he enjoys watching it anyway. And I think it's good to always have different opinions.
Yeah.
We got one more email on this, though, before we get into the main show itself. This comes in from Paul, and it says, hello, Luke, Ollie, and Laurie. The debut on the main roster for Johnny and Ciampa are in storyline. They are somewhat back together. They stood at the top of the ramp holding their titles at the end of TakeOver Phoenix, and then a week later on the same team for Halftime Heat. So this really isn't damaging. It's perfectly in storyline, but it is an anticlimactic reunion of heel DIY. Love you, bye. I mean, this is not a reunion of heel DIY. This is a babyface DIY. That would be my argument.
Yeah, I totally agree that it's anticlimactic.
Yeah.
And it just feels like their characters have changed as well. When did Tommaso Ciampa fight for NXT when he delivered that line on Raw, it felt genuine. Like, he was there to fight for, like, his beloved promotion. But if he said that same line in NXT, it would be a delusional heel way of saying it, where actually he's damaging that promotion.
I made this argument on Twitter yesterday, and I make it in my SmackDown review. Would NXT have booked those segments? Would they have booked a backstage segment where Tommaso Ciampa and Johnny Gargano were watching a TV screen and then said, we're fighting for NXT, and then booked them in a tag match where they're baby faces against a heel team? They wouldn't have, because it doesn't make sense for the story.
Yeah.
So if it doesn't make sense for a story in NXT, why are we forgiving it when they do it on Raw? But anyway, let's get on with the show itself. We are more positive about on this episode. We do have some grievances with the NXT stuff, because of course we do. But I thought the show actually was very good. I really enjoyed SmackDown this week. Here's the show, and we'll be back again for the outro in a little bit.
Well, I'm not going to go over all the I still don't like that the whole NXT thing's happened. I stand by everything I said yesterday. There was a lot of debate on my review and what we said in the Wrestle Ramble. And I think we can all agree on two things. One, it was a surprise. Definitely a surprise.
It was surprising.
Whether it's a good surprise or a bad surprise, that's up for debate. Number two, the crowd was dead.
Yes, yeah.
And whether that's the crowd's fault or WWE's fault, that's also up for debate.
Chicken or egg, which came first?
But it's interesting on SmackDown, because the same stars appeared here. Shane McMahon walked out at the start of the episode, did an in-ring promo, slapping hands, smiling, not really mentioning anything at all about his tag title loss. Just 2 days previously.
The titles he desperately wanted to win.
That was his childhood dream. I mean, maybe he never dreamt about a lengthy reign. He just wanted to win them and get on the books.
Just do one photo shoot with them.
Yeah. And he gets in the ring and he says, all those guys that were on Raw, so Tommaso Ciampa, Johnny Gargano, Aleister Black, and Ricochet, they're also, I was so impressed with them. Although, what authority does he have? Because there are no authority figures. I was so impressed with them. They're also going to be in action here tonight. And I was just like, okay. I'm just going to sit back and I'm going to drop all the sort of fury that I had about this whole situation and just treat this as an isolated thing. And sometimes, just to warn you, bits will still bubble up.
Yes.
Like every time I see DIY together, that something will bubble up, and I go, something's not quite right here.
Well, it's because you're passionate. I said this in my SmackDown review. I think the reason why you and I were the way we were in that Raw review yesterday and sort of our feelings on those NXT call-ups. It's because we care. It's because, in particular, about this Gargano-Ciampa storyline that we've been so invested in for the last 3 years that just seeing this, just it didn't sit right with me. And that really put a damper on it. Also didn't like seeing Aleister Black take, you know, being in a match with Elias where Elias took 90%. The comedy jobber took 90% of the match. If you, I mean, it's not like, to call him a jobber is maybe a bit harsh, but he's very much a lower mid-card guy. He has got no credibility whatsoever. He was laid out by Jeff Jarrett, of all people.
Mm.
But I would say, with the NXT guys on this show, aside from DIY, they were presented better. Because Black had a match with Andrade, which was a competitive match where both guys got something out of it and Black got the win. It didn't really hurt Andrade, but it made Black look very good. This was so much better than having Elias do a headlock on Aleister Black for 10 minutes.
And, well, we'll get into each person shortly, but that was the first match. I think the crucial difference between Raw and SmackDown, because not much changed in the presentation of these NXT call-ups. There's still very little context. They're still not really giving you much reason. If you've never watched NXT and aren't familiar with these guys, which the large portion of WWE viewers are not.
I think it's so much larger than a lot of people think it is.
Yeah, like in our bubble, it feels like NXT is a huge thing, but really, it's not a big thing outside in comparison to the, well, maybe the portion's getting bigger, but that's only because the mainstream viewership is
going
shrinking.
Down, yeah.
So the main difference is the crowd here. And it did help. I'm not going to lie. It did help seeing these guys get reactions. And, you know, this is the New Orleans crowd. It's a much better wrestling city. And you got people chanting NXT when Aleister Black came out. Because, like you said, he was in a match with Andrade. And they had that great feud together with Zelina Vega.
In the same place.
Yeah.
Just like last year over the NXT Championship, which they brought up on commentary, which gives you a much better sort of like understanding of why this match should be a big deal on SmackDown. No, it was Aleister Black's debut match way back when he against Andrade. That's how he came into the company. If you ignore the Tommy End thing. But that's the other side of things. People were saying that, well, Gargano and Ciampa have been tagging on Halftime Heat and the house shows. And I'm like, I don't think that's part of continuity because it's never been brought up on NXT that they have tagged together.
Whereas the main roster, I think they see Halftime Heat as more in continuity than all of NXT.
It's the bizarrest thing because like 2 weeks ago on NXT, Johnny Gargano cut a promo where he said, I hate you, Tommaso Ciampa. We're not a tag team. We're not friends. I only came out on the stage at Phoenix and posed with you to show you that I could win a title on my own. So it's then very weird for them to be backstage going like, we're here for NXT.
I think in Vince McMahon's head, because Halftime Heat was one of the most watched matches involving NXT wrestlers ever.
The most watched.
Yeah, yeah, because it just had so much attention in it from the Super Bowl halftime. And it was on like Facebook and YouTube and all these different outlets. So maybe there's a, if it's kind of the old, if a tree falls in the woods, that does it actually
does
make
Vince
a sound?
McMahon hear
does
it?
Vince McMahon hear it is crucial.
Yeah.
And the NXT viewership to him is just it's a Triple H thing.
Yeah, Vince doesn't watch NXT. Like that's well documented. Vince doesn't watch NXT, which is why when a lot of NXT call-ups come up to the main roster, he's like, who are they?
Mm.
And I don't really know. And he looks at Bobby Roode and he's like, and he hears the theme song, he's like, oh cool, so you're a babyface then. And you're like, well, no, I was a heel.
Actually, no, it's more complicated than that.
A bit more complicated than that. I was like, no, baby face, I like it. Go out there, wear the robe.
Yeah. Well, so Aleister Black comes out and he's getting this good reaction, and I'm like, okay, I'm just gonna drop all the fury of this stuff because you know, in my belief, I feel like these guys should have just a lot more story and immediate substance behind them rather than just, here they are. Like, I'll be fine with, here's one guy.
That's it.
I'll be a little bit more like, if you go, here's two guys. But four guys who are such big players in NXT, getting dragged into the fury hole
again. Absolutely, yeah. But the key point there is because it's four of them at the same time and all four of them are then competing for audience attention. Whereas if it was just Ricochet came down to help Finn Balor against Bobby Lashley, and then Shane was like, and Ricochet was so impressive that we're going to have a match with him again tonight. Ricochet would feel like a bigger deal than just being, he is one of four people.
Like, look at the last few months of SmackDown and the great job they've done with Mustafa Ali and Kofi Kingston.
Point.
Where they've turned a whole character around and catapulted them into the mainstream with credibility over the course of a night. Really, in an hour, in Kofi Kingston's case. I know he's got a lot of stuff behind him, but if we look at it like that, that worked for them, and they've got, in Ali's case, like 2 years behind him in WWE. Kofi's obviously a lot more, like 11 years. It's like, if you do that with one guy, it can work. But imagine if they did that with four different guys last week on SmackDown into this gauntlet match, and they are all running the gauntlet. You'd be like, well, you know, I really like these guys, but...
Yeah, that's exactly
Who's my main guy? Who's the man?
And as I sort of met in the review as well, whenever I think of like the great NXT call-ups, the ones I think about are The Shield and Kevin Owens. And like just people being...
Kevin Owens is... it's looked over, isn't it? Because he was mishandled afterwards. But what a great first couple of weeks.
Just going straight into a big-time storyline with top guys... People that you recognize and you care about, and you're like, okay, cool, so they're already in a storyline. I can get invested in that storyline. What is Aleister Black's storyline in WWE?
He's moody.
What is Ricochet's storyline? They're just lads having matches, and they're winning those matches, and that's grand, but that's more the Bobby Roode side of NXT call-ups. That's more like the Andrade side of NXT call-ups, where it's just like, hey, they're here, and they've won a match.
Mm.
Let's move on to the next thing.
Yeah. Yeah, but like when Aleister Black came out and I got sucked into the Fury thing. I'm you've got to believe me, I'm trying hard not to.
I liked this episode of SmackDown.
So did I. Well, you know, if you take out all the... I still have all the problems.
Yeah.
All the problems, but I'm just not going to talk. Well, I'm going to try not to talk about it. Aleister Black comes out and then Andrade's music hits. And I wasn't aware that this match was happening.
They did say it on commentary.
Yeah, well, that goes over my head sometimes.
It was Todd Phillips.
And I just like, well, okay, I can't be too down on this because we're getting Aleister Black and Andrade. Yeah, yeah. This would have been a much more impressive match if this had like at least a month worth of build and you can play off their history. But yeah, fine. I'm looking forward to this. And the crowd are chanting NXT. It's that New Orleans crowd. And you show Gargano and Ciampa watching backstage, which was cool. But then at the same time, I was like, it doesn't sit right with me. And they had, you know, a pretty good match. I'm not going to say it was amazing. And I'm not going to say this was the incredible, wow, you've really got yourself over to the main roster audience, Aleister Black. But it was good.
It was a better debut to the main roster audience than his match with Elias was. Mm. And so because of that, a massive thumbs up from me.
Yeah, and I like the way most of it was in the shrink screen ad break, which... Yeah, but it's fine. And it's
that,
fine.
That's a SmackDown
problem.
That's
a thing that happens. And I like the way they almost protected Andrade in defeat, in that it was a well-balanced match, which I believed in. And there were no rest holds. Well, not rest holds that bored me, at least. And Black won with his Black Mass sort of out of nowhere.
Yeah.
And you can kind of protect people in those finishes because you're like, oh, it was just a lucky knockout strike. Andrade went down. And then I feel like they left enough in the tank for another match, which would love to see.
Yeah.
But the crucial thing here, aside from it not being in a match with Elias, was the commentary for Black was bearable. I'm not going to say it was great. It wasn't by any stretch of the imagination, if for anyone who has standards. But it wasn't Michael Cole going, he's moody. He's every tattoo on his body has a story behind it. And I'm going to bring up that fact every time I see him.
Yeah, that is very much a Michael Cole-ism.
They didn't say moody, which was the big thing that's been mocked. Have you seen Aleister Black's Instagram post?
I have not.
He mocked up the Moody Blues, apparently, or a band.
They are a band.
Yeah, and he put the Moody Blacks.
Nice.
And they photoshopped his face and all of the
very
good.
It's also, I think, crucial to note as well that these four lads all had NXT branding for their name, their name bars, which again suggests, and it's weird because someone said, I haven't checked this, but someone said that the NXT Twitter feed has been like saying goodbye to these people, and we're getting like... I think the next set of NXT tapings are happening this week, which will be like the final builds towards... actually, it might be not the final build, but they're building towards TakeOver...
Fastlane. TakeOver Fastlane.
TakeOver Fastlane, yeah. Yeah, it's coming at you, baby, thick and fast. So it'll be interesting to see what storylines they're weaving into that show, whether those storylines are actually going to pay off those main roster storylines, or if they're actually going to continue the storylines they were doing in NXT, and if their storylines, they're going to be writing these characters out so they are going to go up to the main roster after WrestleMania and actually go to a specific brand, as opposed to being, these are NXT lads, here they are.
They teased a big announcement. Did you see that, NXT?
I did not.
Yeah, a big announcement. No one knows what it is, but maybe it seems like, considering what happened on Monday and Tuesday, and NXT appears to have been gutted with no prior warning, there's going to have to be some big shakeup of what's going on down there. But this point of maybe, like, maybe there was no substance, and I think we can all agree, there was no planning or substance prior to Monday of all this stuff happening.
No.
However, when reportedly the writers were told to think outside the box, let's do something big, maybe they said, well, let's put these guys out there, they'll appear on Raw and SmackDown, and actually, or we'll start telling this story now, and it's about a larger invasion angle. And that's the only way where I could, you know, a month from now, I'm not going to say, well, that's great storytelling, because I still think you're missing the start. But I'm going to say at least it got good.
Yeah.
And at least you made something of it. And so don't come to me in 2 months when we've had this great NXT invasion and say, you're wrong now. But that's not how storytelling works. It's still like a bad third of a movie at the start. It's just you left with the good part.
Yeah.
The DIY stuff, they're backstage. They get a backstage bit.
Do you realize people are going to do that anyway?
Yeah, I did, yeah. They get a backstage promo bit before their match against the Bar. And Tommaso Ciampa said, we're here to take over.
Yeah.
And it took me back to Triple H's slip in his opening promo, where he said, as you know, I run NXT's, like, The line he was meant to say was WWE's third global brand, NXT. But he said, as you know, I run NXT. And he went, oh, sorry, it's live TV, you can make mistakes. And then he said, WWE's third touring brand.
Mm.
And I just thought that was...
You think these are little subtle drops?
I don't know. You know, like, we're clutching at straws here because they have given us nothing story-wise. So maybe these are actually subtle teases.
Or is this going to be one of those situations which we get criticized for, which you fantasy booked a storyline in your head, and then when that doesn't happen...
But it's because there's no story here. I'm clutching at straws. So I don't know. It's so weird for Triple H to muck up on a promo. And then that and Ciampa saying, we're here to take over. We've said forever. It's kind of funny how NXT's big events are called takeovers. It's like hiding in plain sight, this idea of a hostile takeover, a corporate takeover, when Triple H finally wrestles control from Vince McMahon.
I thought the idea was it was just they were taking over the network. It was NXT taking over the network for a night.
There's multiple interpretations. I think that's their by the book thing, but Triple H, you know, he hides in plain sight all the time. He's like, I'm the cerebral assassin. He bought the famous story that he bought Vince McMahon a dinosaur skull.
Oh, yeah.
That
yeah.
hangs up in Vince's office. I mean, like, what a loaded present that is. Like, you can say, oh, yeah, but, like, what, you know, this is the thing that ruled the earth. And saying, yeah, but it died. It's extinct. Yeah. It once ruled the earth. It's like Triple H saying, here is a present of me going to kill you and take over your company, corporately speaking, yeah. kill you in just 5 years and marry your daughter. And become like, it's just...
Oh, man. I always think of that the Wrestling Observer Radio, when they were back on IATA, I think it's in 2001 or like 2000. It's like 1999. I'm pretty sure it's 2000, actually, where Brian Alvarez says, like, I can just see it now. Triple H is going to be running this company at some point. He's going to marry the boss's daughter and he's going to be running this place. And it's like, what an off-the-cuff thing to say and being like a very flippant, cynical way to look at it. And that's exactly what has transpired. Yeah.
So this backstage promo had Ciampa and Gargano, still baby faces, still weird. I still, you know, they're fine, but it makes me feel insulted and a little bit weird. And the Bar came over and just cosplaying as the purple thing from the McDonald's family.
Grimace.
This was such an off-put. I mean, they're heels. It works for them. But this was just such a visually offensive outfit that they were both in.
I didn't even notice it.
Oh, it's horrible. But that's good. It's their heels. And they the bar joke how no one knows who these guys are, which is the exact same verbiage, really, that Chad Gable and Bobby Roode said to them the previous night. So they're obviously trying to build this sentiment that I guess the NXT guys can overcome. And Ciampa says they're here to take over. And Gargano has this really good line. Like, it's I've forgotten how much of a good babyface he is because he's done this descent into darkness so well. But he's like, we're not here to set the bar. We're here to break the bar. Just a great line. I thought, why has no one ever said that in a promo before?
They thought of it this week, yeah. I guess. Yeah, no, it's crazy to think that Gargano, we always said he was like the best babyface ever in terms of WWE. He was the best babyface WWE had since Daniel Bryan. And it's been like a guy, and Sami Zayn, of that guy that you just really wanted to get behind and win the NXT Championship, which made his heel turn all the more impactful because you're like, oh, you were so close. You were so close to being the best and the number one guy, and you've gone down this wrong path, which is why it was such a good story and why it's so frustrating that their babyface is here and all of that's being ignored.
Yeah, and it's not like Elias and Braun Strowman just turn on a whim like this week, they're a babyface. That was 6 months of a slow descent where he got a little bit evil every month, yep. Did a little bit like something more nefarious or slightly cheating.
All through costumes, all subtle storytelling through the outfits that he was wearing. And it's all like, no, he's just a babyface on the main roster. But it's fine.
We're not getting sucked in.
He looked at the title that Ciampa was holding, which people really clutched onto yesterday to be like, no, they are still telling the same story.
Hmm. Where? On Halftime Heat. So this was a better backstage promo than the previous night. I thought Ciampa and Gargano felt a little bit more natural. Not as good as they presented in NXT, but it didn't feel as scripted, although it definitely was scripted. It didn't feel as stiltedly delivered.
Yeah.
And the bar they're good fun. And they laughed a lot. When
they had
Gargano
a right old chuckle, didn't they?
Yeah, it's like sort of evil.
It was Shane Douglas levels of chuckling.
It was like 80s hench person laugh. 80s movie, that is. So this turned into DIY taking on the bar. And it was just nice to see the crowd being into the DIY match, yeah. Especially after the Revival one the previous night.
Yeah, excuse me. It's nuts to think that we, like on Raw, like 48 hours ago, more than 40 hours ago, I suppose, we had a rematch of that NXT TakeOver Toronto match that you and I reviewed for the Patreon podcast, where we did nothing but talk about how awesome that match was. We were nothing but praising for it. And that was it was barely a talking point on Monday, because it was like they had a match and the crowd couldn't have given less of an S.
Yeah.
At least, and you're right, the crowd really did elevate this show. I thought they were dead during the Ricochet match. But that's because Ricochet was against Eric Young.
Yeah, yeah.
Who's been on TV like 3 times since he's debuted last year. So, of course, the crowd aren't going to react to him doing a headlock. And so I thought that was a real shame for Ricochet. But I thought that DIY looked good. It just doesn't sit right with me.
Mm, yeah, the same. But this match as an in-ring thing, just like the Revival match, was really good.
They're very good pro wrestlers.
Yeah, man, Gargano and Ciampa as a team are so good. I don't even know if I'm being worked in one of these spots. I just get Ciampa in particular is so good.
He's incredible.
At working around this one knee injury.
Yeah.
You know, like Seth Rollins has been selling the leg for about 20 years. And I'm just over it. I'm like, yeah, okay, I get it.
Yeah.
I get it. You're limping and now you're diving. I just, well, are you hurt? But Ciampa, he doesn't even do it. Well, he sells like you would sell in a fight where you don't sell and you just really subtly do something. And credit to the commentary, they pointed it out as well. But it was a spot where he did a sunset flip powerbomb on Sheamus, I think it was, off the top rope. And Sheamus fell on Ciampa's leg. Rather than in between his legs.
All of his weight fell onto his leg.
Yeah, and then Ciampa rolled outside and he's holding it. He's out there for a while and the commentary team say, hey, that's Ciampa's surgically repaired knee where he was out for almost a year.
I thought medics were with him at one point because all of a sudden you could see the front row of the crowd like look over the barrier as if something was happening down below.
And as soon as that happened, I'm just like, oh my God. If I didn't hate these NXT call-ups like this already, you freaking injured the NXT champion. I'm just like, going into this rage vortex again. And then Gargano, in the meantime, is doing this fantastic
incredible hot tag
baby face hot, right, and that gets me into Gargano's. That's the beauty of them two. They work as a tandem.
Yeah,
it's not just that Johnny's one of the best hot tags in wrestling. It's also that Ciampa's one of the best guys to set up that tag. It's a phenomenal partnership. And like Gargano isn't even in full face mode. Like he's still, I think he's hanging on to his conflicted.
He's trying to make something of the character.
Yeah, because if you go back and watch full babyface Gargano, like that, it's Shawn Michaels selling with the big eyes and everything, and really focus on facials. But here he's a lot more about business, it feels. And like Sheamus gets the pin on Gargano, I'm like, how is he going to get out of this? And Ciampa runs in. I was like, are you injured or what? It was like I really got into it. I think they're one of the best tag teams in the world, and they're also two of the best singles wrestlers in the world. It's like all of this again comes back to that's why it's a shame that they've been treated
a Sheamus
they've been treated like this.
And to one of the I got so many tweets about this yesterday. Mm. And I think there were comments left on the video. I think people have pointed this out. We have said in previous reviews, I would just like to see them redo this Ciampa Gargano storyline again when they come to the main roster, and I'd be fine with that. And everyone's going, they're literally doing exactly what you asked for. And I was like, but crucially, they're still telling that story. The story hasn't finished yet. Yeah. In NXT, this story is still going on. If the story had come to a conclusion, and then 6 months later, they just started doing it again on Raw and SmackDown, I'd be like, grand. But it's not. It's still going on. We don't know what the conclusion of the story is yet.
Yeah, I completely agree. Like, you can't have two different continuities running at the same time. It doesn't work for comics. That's why people can't get into all these different Batman titles.
We don't need 12 Batman titles.
Yeah, yeah. I replied to a comment like that. I was just like, yeah, I agree. I actually wouldn't mind seeing this whole storyline play out again. Finish the first one, though. Yeah. Don't have them play out at the same time.
Yeah.
So Ciampa rolled up Sheamus for the win in kind of like a similar finish where it protects the bar. It wasn't a decisive victory. And that's when I sort of sat back and I was like, oh, it's great that all these NXT call-ups are winning. But these aren't like, none of these have been dominant victories. And again, it's that like they don't all have to be dominant victories, but you've got four guys all called up, the top tier of NXT, and they're all hanging. They're hanging in there and getting a win at the end.
Well, that's it. Like the matches, they have no stakes. Mm. And so therefore, when they get a win at the end of that, then there's no... You get sort of nothing out of it. Like, if Aleister Black goes back to NXT, like, what has he gained from being up on the main roster for Raw and SmackDown? What has Gargano and Ciampa gained from pinning the Revival and the Bar? Like, is it going to set up a Raw tag team title match for next week? Or are they going to be there next week? They're not calling these official call-ups. Mm. It's this weird thing, as you said, because this is such a last-minute decision. This is such a panic-booked decision that they don't know where they're going with it. It's the same with the on-their-way-to-WWE lot. Story is, they were all going to get called up after the Rumble anyway. But when they panicked, because ratings were down, you had Vince McMahon come out and say, Baron Corbin's at fault here, it's a new era, removing authority figures, etc., they didn't know what to do with them. So it's like, they're on all the brands. And then, but we can't have them in matches. They're just in backstage segments. So we just had that for weeks on end, and video packages for them weeks on end where they didn't know what they were doing with them. And it still feels like we're at this point here with these four lads. They're on TV, but we don't know what we're doing with them just yet. And for me, and perhaps this is just me, like that it's a surprise, grand. But for me, I'd rather a plan was in place. I'd rather you have a surprise with a plan in place. And we talked yesterday, it was like, what someone said, this would have been better if they were surprises. And I'm like, yes, but if you did like Ricochet was a surprise, and then you did Gargano and Ciampa as a surprise, and then you did Aleister Black as a surprise, Aleister Black's is not going to feel as important as Ricochet's did 2 hours earlier, because we're all surprised out.
I mean, like, you can kind of do that thing on a Raw after WrestleMania, because the show's designed for those sorts
exactly,
of things.
Exactly, yeah.
But yeah. In a random show after the Elimination Chamber in Louisiana, I think we can all agree that was a very bad decision.
Yeah.
But, you know, blame's on the crowd. But you gotta say, hey, WWE, what the hell were you thinking doing it there? Because I keep coming back to it in my head. Like, if you never did that first on their way to WWE call-up, but you just kept on teasing it's a new era and you started to move bits into place and you build the Raw after the Royal Rumble as this big thing, and that's when you debut the guys you debuted this week. It actually kind of makes sense in terms of the storylines from NXT TakeOver as well.
Yeah.
Because you had, like, Ricochet lose his title.
Well, they're too Gargano.
Yeah, Black didn't beat Ciampa. I'm trying to remember what matches were on that card. And then, like, you've got the... All of a sudden, that was the start of the DIY team then. And you can...
There was a bit, and we actually said this with the on their way to WWE lot as well. Like, they just said to you, here are six names, they're all coming up. Like, and then for 6 weeks, you don't do anything. So you're like, well, why don't you just do one a week then? And you announce one every show and be like, this person's coming, this person's coming, rather than being like, here are a block of five videos, now get excited for all of them.
Yeah.
Where is Lars Sullivan?
He's lurking.
He's lurking.
He's lurking too successfully because no one knows where he is. Speaking of people who have been missing, Eric Young was in the last of our NXT call-up matches with Ricochet. And like when when they announced this, I laughed. I was like, of course. It's like the ghost of NXT present versus the ghost of NXT past and future in one. Like, I think Sanity is one of the biggest examples of how spectacularly NXT acts can be botched on the main roster.
Oh, yeah.
So it was just a weird potential future mirror image if everything went wrong for Ricochet.
Killian Dane kept asking, where is Sanity? Mm. Well, here you are, mate. You're standing on the outside so you can lose to the new toy.
What? And this is it. Like, when I saw this match, I was like, okay, so we're going to get a squash match now. And that's not what happened. Ricochet dominated the match, I would say. Eric Young only got the upper hand when Alexander Wolf sort of
caused a distraction.
Yeah, distracted stuff on the outside, and Ricochet had to dive on both guys to sort of eventually get the pin on Young. But he's winning. He looked good, but this isn't, you know, it doesn't feel like anything. It feels really lacking of substance.
So on NXT, Laurie and I have been talking about this. Keith Lee's been in NXT now for months. Mm. Months and months and months and months and months. It was like TakeOver Chicago was when he debuted or whatever. Whichever show it was. It wasn't Brooklyn. It was the one in between Brooklyn and the WrestleMania show. So he's been there months and months and months and months and months and has had a couple of squash matches, and he lost to Lars Sullivan and he's lost to Cassius Ohno. And me and Laurie are saying, it's like, well, no one's invested in Keith Lee, and why would you be? He's done nothing. He's just had matches. Hasn't had a storyline, hasn't had a feud, and so he's not getting great reactions, and he doesn't feel like anything special in NXT. And it's the same thing here. Like, these guys don't feel special if you just... Andrade, all of his luster was lost very, very quickly when he came to the main roster, because they just had him do squash matches for a couple of weeks and then never put him on TV. And if you're not being put into a storyline, then WWE don't know what to do with you. So, it's that chicken and the egg situation. If you put him in a storyline, then you would have had something to do with them.
Yeah. Yeah, so this match was... Sanity got their entrance in the shrink screen break, which is better than the actual match itself.
So much, I'd much rather entrances be put in those breaks.
The announcers, I guess Ricochet's character is, if you put your mind and heart to it, you can do anything.
It's also set your DVRs, because you're going to want to rewatch everything that he does, because he does flip-de-doos.
This was whatever it was. It was fine.
Ricochet looked good.
Yeah, it was fine. I still can't figure out how Ricochet doesn't break his neck in the 6:30.
It's incredible, right?
Because he's like an inch away from the guy, and he still hasn't fully rotated.
Yeah.
But then he's fine, and he's standing up, and I was like, there's a dropped frame here in real life. I don't get how he does it.
He's a video game come to life, Cole.
So here's my proposal for... Because I think Ricochet was the best showcased on Raw.
Yes.
But, you know, I'm saying of a flat crowd reaction and it was the crowd reaction that did down DIY and Revival, and it was just the Elias stuff that did down Black. And Ricochet looked pretty good overall, I would say. Well, of that bunch.
At least against Leo Rush.
Yeah. And here I felt like he looked the least special. because he's fighting against Eric Young, who's done nothing for a year. We're not saying it's their fault. We're not saying it's Keith Lee's fault. We're just saying it's the way they've been presented. And the crowd weren't as into this match.
They popped for flip-de-doos.
Yeah, but they were noticeably quieter for whatever reason. And I just thought, well, do you need this match? The main event was a six-man tag with all the heels from the chamber versus all the babyfaces in the chamber. So AJ Styles, Kofi Kingston, Jeff Hardy versus Daniel Bryan, Samoa Joe, Randy Orton. Why can't Randy Orton and Samoa Joe take out Jeff Hardy in that match, like previously in the night? And, ooh, we need a tag team partner. Don't announce who it is yet. And then Kofi Kingston's like, well, I got this guy, and out comes Ricochet. And then you have him in that main event mix.
The only downside to that, I would say, is that that match was designed for Kofi, which would have made Ricochet feel...
That's a fair point, yeah.
Which Ricochet wouldn't have felt special in that match either. Personally, I just wouldn't have had this match and just given that main event more time.
Mm, yeah.
But, and that's the thing, is like when Shane said, we're getting these NXT call-ups again, or these NXT guys again on TV, I was like, well, I think we don't need them on SmackDown. You need them on Raw because there's no one there. But we didn't need them on SmackDown. SmackDown's fine, like, without them. So you could have not done them on this week's show. Or, if you're going to do that, do different call-ups. Do, like, we kind of predicted it might be Kairi Sane, or, like, just focus on the women's side of things this time. Kairi Sane and Io Shirai or something like that. If you feel the need to call up four at a time, do it that way. So it almost felt like that you didn't need them on this show.
Yeah, because it was weird. The show overall, which we'll get into the rest of it, which isn't that much apart from the NXT call-ups, it felt like that they were happening in two distinct universes. You had the NXT matches, and then you had all the stuff that we've been telling over the course of months that hasn't just been dropped on us on Monday morning.
Yeah.
So you've got the main event scene with those six guys. That was unaffected. Asuka came back, and she was in the mix with Mandy Rose, but, you know, pre-existing SmackDown stars. Like, where's R-Truth? Where's
Nakamura.
Samoa Joe and Nakamura?
Samoa Joe's on TV. You mean
Oh, sorry,
Rusev.
Yeah, Rusev. Where's... Well, the bar were there, but, like, the bar, the Usos...
The Usos were, like... It's that mid-card scene of SmackDown that once felt like there was a lot going on there. It's Rusev and Nakamura haven't been on TV for weeks on end. R-Truth hasn't been seen since he won the belt. And it's amazingly, that's exactly what Rusev said was going to happen. He did an interview with Lillian Garcia where he said, when I got the belt in December, I wanted to do something with that belt. I wanted to make that belt feel as important as it did when I defended it against John Cena at WrestleMania when I came out in a tank. But I've lost it now, and so no one's going to see it again.
Yeah.
And it's exactly what happened.
I totally get your point. Out of the two shows... SmackDown doesn't need anything changing. It's been a spectacular wrestling show for the last month, really. So why put in all these NXT call-ups?
And to credit, it still blows my mind, and we said this in yesterday's show, it's the same guy booking the shows. Like, it's the same guy doing both shows. SmackDown built stuff towards Fastlane. Raw did nothing of the sort. Raw built no matches towards the pay-per-view that's happening in 3 weeks. Whereas SmackDown built... 3 matches for that show.
And it's the biggest show of the year, Fastlane.
Behind. Oh, you think it's the biggest?
Yeah, Fastlane's the biggest show of the year. I can't think of anything else. Dig, diggity, dig, diggity, dog.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
So let's do some Patreon shout-outs before we get out of here. Thank you. Arnie K. The K stands for the coolest dude ever.
Oh, it's so nice to see Arnie back. Chippendale Creasy.
Woo!
Yes, nice one.
Ben, hey now, you're a rock star. Haley.
Yes.
Woo. Yeah.
I've got to give a shout out to one other person as well, because they did email in. I did my Mr. Plow joke, because that was the first thing I thought of when I saw their name was Plowman. But to their credit, I didn't actually really say their name, because their name is Michael Plowman.
Oh.
So I just said Mr. Plow. So, sorry, Michael Plowman.
That name again is
Michael Plowman, which is what I've amended it to. That'll be there next month. But also giving a shout out to the Trouble Pimp Angel, Santiago Villanueva.
Nicely pronounced.
Thank you so much.
The real boss, Matt Robinson.
Like yes. A boss. Like a boss. Alex weighs a fen ton.
That's potentially shaming. Join him, John Iowa.
John Iowa, yeah. Marky Mark and the Buncey Bunch.
Whoa!
Oh, I love it.
The Rocket, Dan Van Syke.
Dan Van Syke.
Or Sky.
I'd have said Sky.
Yeah.
And the Ninjetic Pirate, Megan.
Nice.
Ninjetic Pirate, man.
SmackDown opened with that Shane McMahon promo where he high-fived everyone and he didn't mention the tag team title loss at all. But they also played this really good recap of the Elimination Chamber main event. And it really focused in on Kofi Kingston and Daniel Bryan. And then at the end, like, how emotional that Kofi Kingston stuff was. And it was a really good video package.
So, so good.
Really, really neatly put over Kofi and... So at the end of the show, they announce it's going to be Kofi Kingston versus Daniel Bryan at Fastlane.
Which is one of those things where I've never understood the complaint that WWE is too predictable and that's a problem. Because we all thought this was going to happen, right? Like, coming out of Elimination Chamber, we were like, well, they've got to have a match at Fastlane. And you announce the sixth man, you're like, oh, and Kofi's going to pin Daniel Bryan in the main event. That's not a bad thing. I don't mind that I can see that coming based off the video package you showed me at the start of the night. That's okay.
Yeah.
I'm happy with this.
Yeah, I love Thor. I was really invested in Thor Ragnarok. And I believe, like, some, you know, I was worried for Thor at moments, but I never thought Thor wasn't going to win. So, like, there's predictability where it's copy and paste and
it's
boring.
Baron Corbin versus Braun Strowman.
Yeah. Or there's predictability where it's like, no, that's actually good fundamental storytelling.
Yeah.
But yeah, Shane came out. They did the video package. And then Shane's in full authority figure mode. He is running down the card of what we've got tonight. He's recapping stuff from the previous night, talking about how amazing those NXT call-ups are. I'm like, what is your role? How can you get invested in anything when they tell you something is over with and isn't going to happen anymore, and then they just do it again 2 weeks later as if they never said it? It's so frustrating. But Miz came out. Miz knows. And he said, hey, I know automatic rematch clauses
are
antiquated and aren't a thing anymore, but you're a McMahon, aren't you? Not an authority figure. So you can make that happen, can't you? And the Usos came out and they were like, yeah, we won it because you're choking. It's an easy win for us. So it's on.
Yeah, Shane was like, yeah, we're getting a rematch. We're having a rematch and it's going to happen at Fastlane.
So what is Shane? And he was making the match at the end. Paige has a movie out this Friday, or it was last Friday, I don't know. It feels like it's been coming out for a year. And she was a really good general manager that everyone liked. But she was taped just for the new era.
Baron Corbin is to blame.
Yeah.
I did like the Usos line where they said that the reason why you lost is because Miz is a joke. He's a failure. He's an A-lister with C-list skills.
I mean,
that's great.
C-list wrestling skills, definitely.
Acting wise, he was very good and talking about his dad and things like that. I thought Miz was really, really great in this segment.
He got teary. Very genuinely, it seemed authentic to me. And he was talking about how Shane bringing out his dad, sorry, Miz's dad, to tell Miz that he was proud of him. That's like, he said that was the best moment of his career, which is laughable. but Miz saying it had me believe that he believed it was the best moment of his career.
There's a reason why he's the longest lasting Marine. Yeah. There's a reason why it wasn't Ted DiBiase Jr.
Miz was very good here. And he said later on that Mr. Miz, Miz's dad, who has really no place in a wrestling performance world, because, you know, he just smiles all the time.
Yeah.
He's not
a
good
nice
actor.
Tash, though.
But he is funny. He's a funny presence. I'm glad. He's like a meme that's become sentient.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I like that. And he's going to be at ringside for their Fastlane match.
Yeah. We had the Aleister Black match and the DIY segment. And then AJ and Jeff were kind of like getting ready backstage because of the six-man. And Kofi walks up and he says that, you know, normally people would offer an olive branch, but I'm going to offer you a pancake branch because it's the New Day.
Yeah, and it was a branch with loads of pancakes stuck on it. It was, so this was great. This was just funny. Kofi played it really deadpan. And behind him is Xavier Woods cradling Big E like a child who has the silliest expression on his face way through. He's like this, like a pancake eating gremlin.
He is having the time of his life, Big E.
Mm.
Ever since they just let the New Day be who they were meant to be and not what WWE wanted them to be in the early days of New Day, it just feels like these three have had the most fun in this company.
Yeah.
There's a reason why they're not asking for their release.
But that we know of.
That we know of, I suppose, yeah.
Yeah, Xavier and... I don't. No one's really ever talked about that. But, you know, Xavier is very friendly with Kenny Omega and the Young Bucks.
Yeah.
And they've done stuff in multiple other areas. They've teased, like, six-mans between them and the Young Bucks and stuff. Never really thought about that. Because, like you said, they're so... They feel so WWE.
Yeah.
But, yeah. Well.
Yeah. Well.
Maybe one to watch.
If they win the belts, we'll know that they asked for their release.
So after that, we had DIY taken on the bar. Then we got the announcement that Ricochet's facing Eric Young. See, there's my note.
Ha.
With an exclamation mark. DX getting the Hall of Fame video package. And then...
Right, so Asuka's return to TV hasn't been seen since she beat Becky Lynch, biggest star in the company, at least the biggest female star in the company, the most over female star in the company at the Royal Rumble, tapped her out clean in the middle of the ring, hasn't been seen since. She returned to SmackDown this week, and I was like, hi Asuka, there you are. Love, so happy to see you back. And essentially she did an in-ring interview with Kayla Braxton where they did a wonderful job of skipping over a lot of 2018, where they were like, you had the longest winning streak in WWE history. You won the Women's Royal Rumble, and then you won the title. It's like, none of the other stuff in the middle happened.
Yeah, you had about 10 months there.
And Asuka just said, like, do you feel like you've been lost in the shuffle? And Asuka says, I've beaten Charlotte and Becky at TLC. I beat Becky at the Royal Rumble. I'm looking for a new challenger. And I made this joke in my review that, probably since around the Royal Rumble, maybe a little bit before that, I feel like a lot of internet chatter, I've certainly seen it in comments, and I've had interactions with people when we reply to comments, of saying, like, Sonya Deville will be a really good challenger for Asuka if she's just given a chance. And WWE listened to their fans by giving you Sonya Deville's best friend, Mandy Rose. Because when Mandy Rose came out, I was like, well, at least we're getting an Asuka squash match, I guess, to show that Asuka's still a dominant champion.
That's what I thought. I thought, oh, okay, Mandy Rose is going to... Because Mandy Rose interrupts and she does a little promo herself. Like, you know, I can beat you. Mandy Rose is ready for Asuka. I was like, okay, so Asuka's going to beat her and then they'll set up the actual feud, the storyline that they've been working on for the 3-4 weeks
yeah.
that Asuka hasn't been on TV.
Because you've had time. You've had time to work, think of something.
I've got to point this out. I can't shake it. And I've said it before. But when Mandy Rose comes out with Sonya Deville, and it's the smudge lens, and you can't see Sonya Deville because she's all blurry. I just... That's what Vince McMahon sees. We're never getting a Sonya push.
No, absolutely not. Never underestimate the power of being blonde.
Yeah.
And then it led to a match between Asuka and Mandy Rose. As we said, I just figured this would be, not a squash match, because Mandy Rose, you know, she was part of the final two or the final four in the Elimination Chamber. Yeah. So they clearly really like her, so they'll give her a good competitive match. She had a nice V-trigger on the outside. And then she feigns an eye injury.
Oh, you're missing a bit.
We'll come back to the Lacey Evans thing.
Well, I think it's important to say that bit first.
Okay.
Because that would be... So Lacey Evans walks out, gets halfway, and walks back up.
Scared by Sonya Deville.
Yeah. I appreciated Sonya Deville shouting at her.
Yeah.
Like, that was a good touch. Sonya's great. And she walks off, she does her shtick. And that's like, that's your distraction spot, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's where... like Asuka can beat Mandy Rose, or if you're insane enough to have Rose get a surprise victory over Asuka, that can happen. But it didn't actually affect anything, because then they wrestled for a few more minutes and then this happened.
Mandy Rose feigned an eye injury, and Asuka was like, no, I want to continue wrestling. And the ref's like, no, pushing her back. And this went on for quite a while. And then all of a sudden, Mandy Rose just got a surprise pinfall victory over Asuka. I was stunned.
Mm.
She outsmarted her. Like, this wasn't Asuka. This wasn't getting a surprise pin. This was a calculated plan by Mandy Rose. She outsmarted the women's champion. And Corey Graves on commentary going, she outsmarted. And Byron's like, no, she cheated. She's like, no, Corey's right. She outsmarted the champion, because Asuka, like an idiot, fell for this. And Mandy Rose now is the fourth person in WWE to pin Asuka. Or tap her out. Charlotte Flair, Carmella, and Nia Jax are the other three. And Iconics hold two victories over Asuka in tag matches where they pinned her partner. And I think someone else said that James Ellsworth has technically got a win over her as well through countouts or something along those lines. And you look at that list and you're like, Charlotte Flair, Carmella, Mandy Rose. Never underestimate the power of being blonde and beautiful in WWE. It will get you everywhere. I've no real issue with Mandy Rose. Her character does nothing for me. I guess her feud with Naomi's over. I don't know what it led to. And so I've got no real issue with Mandy Rose. I just do not buy her as a serious contender to Asuka. Absolutely do not buy her as a contender.
It's a total waste. It's a total waste of Asuka. I'm worried that it's not just a fast lane filler match. It might go on to WrestleMania, and really Asuka shouldn't be having a fast lane filler match, because she just skipped a whole pay-per-view cycle. Like, she should be getting something more here. Apparently the report as of Monday was that Asuka was going to face Lacey Evans at WrestleMania, but that was dropped, and now the plans are up in the air for who Asuka's going to face. I think, like, you know, like, as we agreed, NXT call-ups are a surprise. Crowd was dead. I think we can all also agree that WWE have completely mishandled Asuka since winning the belt. And it's crazy, considering all the real genuine momentum and how fans were into her when she won that TLC match.
It actually felt like they had managed to remarkably rehab the terrible job they'd done with her in 2018 outside of the Royal Rumble win. It really did feel like, oh, they've found it. They've worked this out. They've rehabbed this character. She's back to where she was when we loved her in NXT. And here we are, a few weeks later, and she's being pinned by Mandy Rose on TV because she's an idiot and Mandy Rose outsmarted her.
And just the Lacey Evans thing as well. Like, it doesn't play into anything. It's, I don't know. Well, let's move on. Charlotte was backstage. She had an interview with a new interviewer.
Who is she?
I think she's the Renee Young clone that they made.
Oh, yeah?
Do you remember she got signed / created a few months ago? I think it was back in August. And in one picture, she looks exactly like Renee Young's face. So it could be her, could be someone different. I don't know.
is this like the what was his name, Rich Brennan, the one who, the commentator who looked exactly like Michael Cole, and you looked, was like, oh, well, I see why you've been hired then. So yeah, she came on screen. I don't, obviously Charlotte was a very good promo because she's great as a heel, but I was so distracted by, like, who are you? Who the devil are you?
Because WWE need more different ladies.
Well,
interview
Dasha's
people?
Obviously busy.
Dasha, Charlie, Kayla, and now
and this new person,
Mini Renee.
Yeah,
which is quite tiny, considering Renee's quite tiny anyway. But Charlotte did show off a awesome looking bruise on her arm absolutely. From the Becky beatdown. That was like a hue, a purple hue. Gonna take him down to market.
It was a good bruise, mate.
And then we got the Miz Shane stuff, where Miz told Shane his dad's going to be at ringside for their Fastlane match. Ricochet beat Eric Young. And then we got the main event, which was preceded by Kayla Braxton interviewing New Day backstage about Kofi. And this was great. And it, like, obviously, it goes without saying, Kofi is brilliant. But let's not overlook how fundamental Xavier and Big E are to making Kofi feel even more special.
Right.
Like, Kofi's great. The presentation of him's been great. But the use of the New Day to just push that, like, he's got momentum. But the New Day are like this, the guys at the back of the train shoveling in coal and making it going faster. They are terrific.
Yeah, absolutely. They're so, so good. And, like, because they were talking about how Kofi Mania has been on a roll for 7 days. Which is what we've been saying as well. Like, 2 weeks ago, no one cared about Kofi Kingston in the main event of a pay-per-view.
8 days ago.
No one cared about Kofi Kingston in the main event. But Kofi Mania is running wild. But Xavier Woods has this line, says, this isn't 7 days in the making. This is 11 years in the making. Yeah. Instagram wasn't a thing when Kofi Kingston was on this journey. Big E made a reference to Empire, which I guess is a TV show. A big Alan Partridge shrug of the shoulders there, I'm afraid. But, like, I did this in my review. Iron Man and The Dark Knight had not been released when Kofi Kingston...
The Dark Knight hadn't been released?
Yeah, 2008.
Whoa.
So when Kofi Kingston debuted, which I believe is January 22nd, 2008, I Wikipedia'd this, Iron Man was released a couple months later and Dark Knight was released after that.
Holy moly.
We were all getting down to Flow Riders Low...
Low, 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 low.
And Randy Orton was WWE champion in the main event. What was the main event of this show?
It was... Good segue.
Thanks, mate.
It was Jeff. As we already said, it was that six-man tag involving Orton on the heels side. And we got a Kevin Owens promo.
It's the same one
in between
from Raw,
this. Yeah, so we don't need to talk about that. But this match was good. It was really fun. Daniel Bryan came out, as he usually does, with it for a promo before the match starts. Welts still clearly on his chest.
I feel like he's asked people to chop him backstage. Like, oh no, they're starting to heal. Chop me again before I go out.
I need a top up. and he's got the, he's great with just great presentation overall with that custom name.
Oh,
bar.
I love
it's
it.
It's green.
And it's just like his Titantron is so good. It's a brilliant presentation of this character.
And he says, he effectively says the same stuff in every promo.
Yep.
And just like Bray Wyatt does. But the difference is, Bryan has substance and wins and titles to back him up. And that's what slowly chipped away at Bray, because he kept losing all these big feuds. But Bryan, like, victories over Bryan mean so much to SmackDown. And to me, because they've built them up so much. And, Bryan had this great line where, I'm not going to be facing any of these guys at Fastlane because I've already beaten them in the Elimination Chamber.
And he's not wrong.
Oh.
The best heels are justified heels. Mm. I thought Bryan was great.
Yeah, really good. But Kofi...
And then he tagged out immediately.
Yeah.
Like a little dirty heel. He's great.
But as you said earlier, to counter my point about putting Ricochet in this match, this was built around Kofi. And he had, I guess, if like Kofi's great, but he's not Ricochet levels of athleticism. Mm. So a Kofi, like his amazing truss dives and his dives over the top rope as well, don't really compare to the somersault 650 senton things that Ricochet can do. But it was a really nicely structured match where Kofi hot tags AJ and there's this really frantic sequence where everyone runs in and it all comes down to Bryan and AJ, and they're doing a double down. And when AJ hot tags in Kofi, that's when like Kofi runs wild and takes out people on the outside with dives, and he hits the Trouble in Paradise to pin Bryan.
Again. He's pinned him again.
Yeah.
And then Shane
McMahon... Bryan lost nothing.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. No, absolutely not. And I don't want to say like, oh, they keep pinning Bryan. Mm. It really, because Bryan lasted, he outlasted everyone in the Elimination Chamber. He was in first.
Yeah.
So he's gained so much from that match that he doesn't lose anything here either. I thought that the performance was really great. And then Shane McMahon comes out and says, Daniel Bryan, you will be defending the title at Fastlane against, pause, Kofi Kingston. And Kofi's had this big celebration. New Day have got him up on his shoulders. It's a great, great moment. And yeah, we're getting Daniel v. Kofi at Fastlane. So that's great. I think I'd said this in a review. My only negative to this is I think a lot of people had their hearts set that we were going to do the Kofi Bryan Mania match with Kofi getting that big win. I can't see them doing a Kofi big win at... I think I know what you're going to... A Kofi big win at Fastlane. Unless, of course, this is an Eddie Guerrero situation.
Oh, what? How do you mean?
Well, Eddie Guerrero won the title at No Way Out before WrestleMania from Brock Lesnar.
Yeah. Right. So, that this could just be an example of us loving the idea of the New Day versus the Straight Veg Society and then spinning off into that Mania match. There's those reports that Daniel Bryan's Mania match is going to be against a returning WWE star, not a Batista or a Triple H, but someone who's injured currently, like a Kevin Owens or a Bray Wyatt or whoever. And
gosh, you imagine if it's Luke Harper.
Yeah.
Can you seriously bring Luke Harper back and put him straight into the main event picture and it's him? It's what he wanted.
That's what they're doing with everyone else on their roster, it seems. But I've actually written it down because I always say someone said this on Reddit. I can't remember who. But this was such a good idea. R James on show on Reddit suggested the next 3 weeks you build the feud around New Day's consumerism versus Brian's socialist shtick, and Kofi loses at Fastlane through Brian's shenanigans, like Rowan interferes. Mm. And you're like, ah, no. How do you then build to the Mania match that we all want? Kofi asks for one more shot at Bryan at WrestleMania. Bryan agrees, but only if Kofi disbands the New Day.
If he loses.
If he loses.
That's wonderful.
Because Bryan's like, you know, they're all about pancakes and
positivity and being together and always having each other's back.
Yeah, and Bryan wants to get rid of that. Oh. And he can frame it like, no, I'm trying to save the world by disbanding you.
Because by disbanding you, there'll be so many less t-shirts available on WWEshop.com. We won't be wasting plastic and this, that, and the other. That's a great idea.
It's a great idea, yeah.
That's so good.
I mean, there's multiple ways you can go, but we've come up with at least two. So let's see where WWE go with it. But I'm just very excited that they're continuing with Kofi's momentum.
Yes.
The fact that he's got the Fastlane match doesn't mean that they'll drop him afterwards. We were worried that they'll just...
drop it completely.
Yeah, come back on tonight's SmackDown and say, well, you made him believe, Kofi. Here's our truth in the US title.
Yeah, Finn Balor it.
Yeah, but now it's like they're keeping him in the mix. They're really smartly keeping the momentum going. They're listening to the fans. Like, this is what we want to happen. We want this. We're so invested in Kofi, so... full credit to WWE for that. I would give this show... it's a difficult one. I would give it... because I love the main event stuff. But really, I guess it's an average. It's a 3 out of 5 show for me.
I give it a low smacktastic.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
I really enjoyed the main event stuff. And the argument that I gave in the show is that I thought this was a better presentation of the NXT guys. Even if the Gargano Ciampa stuff doesn't sit right with me, for the main roster audience, for your main, your Joe Schmoes, this felt like a better presentation of them. Perhaps Ricochet, not so much. So, and I'm just glad that they're riding this wave of momentum with Kofi. And I enjoyed watching the show. I cannot get behind Mandy Rose and Asuka, or Mandy Rose pinning Asuka. Cannot get behind that whatsoever. But I thought Miz was also very good as well.
Mm. Yeah, it's weird. I think Raw has acted as a shield for SmackDown here. Because if they did all these call-ups on SmackDown, like if they didn't come up on Monday Night Raw, I would be equally, like, what the hell are you doing?
Yeah,
with no substance or anything. So the fact that I had 24 hours to deal with that emotionally
made
SmackDown an easier watch when I saw it again.
24 hours of arguing with people on Twitter. I say argument. People just debating. Telling me I'm wrong.
No, debating on Twitter.
You're right. You know, you were talking about a very expensive thing in that sort of documentary about the flat earth things. They were spending a lot of money on something that really sort of like, at the end of the day, you could argue that was a waste of money, but it was a fun little experiment nonetheless. I found someone shared this on Twitter that I thought I would bring this up with you. There is a Kickstarter project that has been launched. 29 days to go. It's had 80 backers thus far. Actually, I'm going to refresh the page in case it's had more, because I feel like this is 83, in fact, now. And it's called Digitally Erase the Rat from the End of the Departed.
Okay.
So, The Departed, it's the Scorsese movie about a Boston gang member and a Massachusetts police officer who sort of like infiltrate each other's groups. And it's a very, very, it's a really well-performed movie. It's an English language remake of...
Internal Affairs.
Yeah.
You sure?
I'm pretty sure it's Internal Affairs.
You carry on talking.
Right at the end of the movie, I'll give you a direct quote here. Unfortunately, The Departed has one...
It is Infernal Affairs.
Is it really? Mm-hmm. I've been saying it wrong.
It's a trilogy.
I do apologize then. And I quote from this Kickstarter page. Unfortunately, The Departed has one huge problem. The movie ends with a painfully on-the-nose metaphor of an actual rat crawling across screen.
Oh, this was a trend in sort of big... budget blockbuster dramas that the Oscar baiting films in the early noughties. I remember what was the freaking Sam Mendes film?
Bond.
No. Okay, you keep talking. I'll find that one.
Anyway, he continues, it's always bothered me that a movie as good as The Departed has such a cheesy ending, and I recently realized it could be fixed by digitally erasing the rat from the last shot. But digital effects are not cheap, which is why I'm here to kickstart trying to raise $4,000. $4,000 may sound a lot, so let me break down the cost for these 9 easy steps. And this is why I loved this Kickstarter and why I wanted to bring this up. Step one, I need $18.91 to buy a Blu-ray of The Departed. I could probably find it on BitTorrent, but I think it's important to support the filmmakers and the studio and not break the law. Step two, I need $141.54 to buy a Blu-ray player because I don't own one.
54 cents?
Yep, apparently so. That's what he's found.
You can get a cheaper Blu-ray player than that, surely.
And he's just...
He's taken us for a ride, this guy.
And he's just broken it down into like this minute detail of like, I've never ripped a Blu-ray before, but I found a program that will cost me $59. I'm going to pay $599 to hire Ed Mundy, a visual effects artist who's worked on TV, but I can't pay him $600 or more because the IRS requires you to send them a 1099 MISC form at the end of the year, and that's too much work for me.
Sure.
Step five, I can't sell this on Blu-ray. Well, I need to... Love this. Step five. Because my end goal is to make the ratless version of The Departed the official version of the film, and because Scorsese shot The Departed on film, I need $414.59 to print the digital file onto 35mm film. Step six. Since I have no way of viewing 35mm film, I'll need $169.92 to scan the film print to convert it to a digital file so I can view it myself. And I need $57 to buy Adobe Creative Cloud Suite for a month. It's just things like this. And eventually, this whole thing is that at the end of it, I will give you a Blu-ray of the definitive ratless cut of The Departed.
So what do you remember what the shot is? Is it like a street and a rat runs across the road?
He's got an image of it there. It's crawling across a window.
So it would just be a shot through the window of Boston. Is it Boston that it takes place? Yeah, because it's the Irish gangs, isn't it? Because it was shortly after, it was a few years after Gangs of New York, which is also of gangs in America.
In New York.
And Irish.
Yeah. So that's the shot that he wants to do. It really made me laugh when I saw
it. It's good.
I just love the minute detail that he's broken this down into.
It's most definitely a joke, though, right? You don't think that's serious.
Well.
I think he recognizes in that he doesn't need to buy the Blu-ray to transfer onto film. To then transfer back on to then digitize again.
Yeah. Can I read you step seven, which is the Adobe Creative Cloud Suite? This will allow me to edit the digital scan of the 35mm print of the ratless digital file into the end of The Departed. Adobe does offer a 7-day free trial of their suite, but I've already used that to make the Kickstarter video.
It's very good. Let's make this happen. Everyone who's a pledge hammer, just don't give money to us for a month.
Go help this guy. Did you find that film?
Yeah, the movie was Revolutionary Road. Came out a bit later, actually, in 2008. But this is, it's Leo. It's Leonardo DiCaprio. And who else is in it? Who's the lady?
Who is the lady?
It's Kate Winslet.
Of course it is.
And
reuniting Titanic.
I think she was married to Sam Mendes at the time. And
she's from my hometown of Reading, Kate Winslet.
And she,
there's an estate named after her.
There's a tremendous 9-minute performance from Michael Shannon for which he got Oscar nominated. It's one of those really cool. It was only in one scene, and he gets an Oscar nomination. He was so good. Anyway, really good movie. Deals with a lot of stuff. And at the end of it, when the movie should have ended 3 minutes prior, they then have one scene where there's a guy and his wife's talking to him and it's an old guy and he just takes out his ear, like his hearing aid, and then the sound of the wife dies down. And like, what? Why? I got all that from the movie. I got that message from the movie. These aren't even the main characters in the movie. Why are we ending on them? You stupid man. You Return of the King dip.
Yeah. That's a reference that's lost on me. Never seen the film. Would you like a Rusev Hey?
Rusev Hey.
This comes in from Jared. Hello, Luke, Ollie, Laurie, but certainly not Randall Keith Natson. I'm excited to share with you my first Rusev Hey, one that maybe Laurie will appreciate because it involves Pokemon and the superstar that would become if injected with a serum and turned to Steve Rogers into Captain America, which is not an insult. Steve Rogers is a virtuous and trustworthy man, just like El Fakador.
Well, we've got a new benchmark for Rusev Hayes, by the way.
Is that Kofi one?
It's Kofi Kingston untied someone's shoelaces.
I'm not sure anyone will have a Rusev Hey as good as that.
That's one, number one. Should we start ranking them? Should we have a top Rusev Hey story? The guy who slapped AJ Styles in the eye.
Yep.
And didn't someone have a brawl at an ICW show?
Is that the Trent Seven one again?
Yeah,
I think
yeah. Trent Seven landed on someone in the crowd.
Anyway, back to Jared's email. Two good friends came
and the Riot Squad not being able to pay for their cab.
That was good. two good friends came to visit me the Sunday before the Elimination Chamber for one of their birthdays. I live in a much larger city compared to them, and there are no comic book or board game shops in their area. So for his birthday, my friend wanted to visit all of the local shops. I told him that this was perfect because there was a Pokemon Go tournament happening that day at one of them, and I had planned to compete. We arrived just a few minutes before the contest was set to start, and gladly so, because next to the game shop, in a vitamin shop, and who did we see leaving that shop? It was the number one fella himself, Seamus. We debated for a second as he walked away if it was him and if he was leaving the vitamin or game shop. After deciding it was him, I ran over to greet him.
Wait, vitamin and game shop?
I think they were asking whether it was the vitamin or game shop he had come out of.
Ah, they didn't see him, right, cool.
Yeah. He was much faster than I gave him credit for because he was in a car and I had cranked it before he saw me about to walk away. He rolled down the window and asked if it was okay to say hi. He greeted me with a fist bump. I asked if I could quickly grab a photo, and to my surprise, he gets out of the car and says sure. He was obviously on a time crunch, and for that I feel bad for interrupting him, yet he was very polite and even did his signature pose without even asking for the photo. It was a genuinely pleasant experience that made me coming in last for the following Pokemon Go tournament a lot less painful. Thank you for all your consistent content, and yes, I've attached the picture below because pics or it didn't happen. And there he is with Seamus.
Hey. Ah, oh, he looks like he's... Doesn't he look so much better without that stupid mohawk?
Yeah, I've always thought Seamus looks pretty rad when his hair's just down.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a good look.
It is a good look.
Handsome fella.
Yeah, Bebop.
That's a sweet, nice thing. But the Pokemon thing reminded me. Mm-hmm. My Valentine's Day gift hasn't arrived for me yet.
What?
Yeah, I know. Yeah. I had one part of it, which was, so I like the pens, which have multiple colours on. So you can select which colour.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
It's easier to take notes. And I got it was a Pikachu one. Pikachu! And I was like, oh, but what's the proper present? and it hasn't arrived. But I was using my girlfriend's phone and I saw the page.
Oh, man.
I was like, I told her and she was like, yeah, it's a Pokemon notebook. From nice. Moleskine.
Ooh, very nice.
Pikachu!
Do you know
where that comes from?
No.
So in the Good Place, and Jason, that they all get stuff that they really always wanted, and everyone gets really nice personal moments.
Yeah.
And for Jason, it's a giant Pikachu cuddly toy, and he just jumps up and goes, Pikachu! It was so happy.
Oh, man. Yeah. I tend to forget Jason moments. He's my least favorite character.
Yeah, yeah. He's a bit too dumb. And he's not endearingly dumb like Chris Pratt in Parks and Rec.
Yeah, or Joey in Friends.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, the only time I've really enjoyed the Jason character is when Janet played him for that one episode.
Yeah.
That
he's
was great.
He's not terrible. No, he's...
Don't blame his performance. Also, he's from the home of the Jacksonville Jaguars and AEW.
He loves them.
He bloody loves the Jaguars. Anyway, that's all we've got time for on this show. Thank you so much for listening. Laurie and I will be back tomorrow for the NXT review. Wonder if that will have any tie-in to what's been happening on
People
Raw and SmackDown.
People might watch that one.
And then be like, the hell are these characters? And that's actually got a match. That's got the NXT North American Championship match between Velveteen Dream and Aleister Black versus Roderick Strong.
Yeah, we'll see who actually is the US champion.
Yeah, the North American champion.
Sorry, yeah, the North American
champion. I don't know
who
the US champion is.
Yeah, yeah. Well, probably Ty Dillinger.
Certainly, probably isn't the one on a house show.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's what we've got time for. We'll see you then. Take care. I love you. Goodbye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.